This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Hear from one of the candidates for McLean County Coroner.
I would like to work with the county board in working at reducing the salary of the coroner.
That's Abby Sorrells. Incumbent Kathy Yoder didn't respond to requests for an interview. The coroner's office has seen large turnover in recent months. The economic recovery picture in Bloomington Normal has some bright colors and some dingy ones. Hear from Economic Development Council head Patrick Hoban. And take a long, strange trip inside your dog's mind. Hint, it's mainly the nose that counts. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The Bloomington Election Commission has suspended early voting after learning of a glitch with its ballots. The ballot did not include listings for circuit judges running for retention. Commission Chair Denise Williams says it's working to correct the glitch and, at the advice of council, has suspended early voting to prevent compromising ballots.
I'm sorry this happened in Bloomington because I believe in the mail-in voting process. I know that it can be fixed, and I know that we can have a good election.
The commission says the State Board of Elections alerted it to the problem. Early voting began September 24th. As of Wednesday, close to 1,500 early voters had already cast ballots at Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington. Both county and city voters use the arena. Nearly 23% of Unit 5 students won't go back to the classroom when the district resumes a hybrid class schedule later this month. Unit 5 says the parents of close to 3,000 students have chosen to keep their kids learning through a computer screen. The district offers that option, but will resume classroom instruction 2 days a week beginning October 19th. The numbers show relatively even distribution by grade level. The city of Bloomington and the town of Normal say they are discouraging trick-or-treating for Halloween this year, though the two municipalities have distributed a list of safety tips if parents do allow their kids to dress up and go door-to-door. McLean County health officials report 21 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, and two more people are in the hospital. The number of hospitalized patients is now 11, with three in intensive care. That means two more patients were moved into the ICU overnight. The county's active caseload sits at 155, continuing a five-day downward streak. Another 51 are now considered recovered. The county's testing positivity rate ticked up slightly to 2.7%. Illinois State University added two new confirmed COVID-19 cases among students, bringing its active caseload up to 21. Bars and restaurants have limited options to keep their patrons warm while they dine outside this fall, but the town of Normal has banned portable heaters. Town spokesperson Kathy Olofsson says the town considers them a fire hazard.
The chance that a portable heater could blow over in the wind or be tipped over by a patron or whatnot.
Bloomington says the city fire inspector must approve portable heaters. Officials in both cities say they will work with bar and restaurant owners to find creative ways to keep customers while the pandemic limits indoor seating. Gardening has become a respite for many people during the pandemic. So-called COVID gardens have popped up all over Illinois, with more people working from home and becoming self-reliant in the wake of food supply disruptions. COVID gardens harken back to victory gardens from the World War II era, when governments encouraged people to plant gardens to supplement the food supply and boost morale. Andrea Bauch lives in Urbana and says gardening has been helping her take her mind off the pandemic.
If there's any silver linings that you can draw from a national and worldwide tragedy, I think that one is what it is for me.
Bauch hadn't gardened much before this year, but says she managed to grow cucumbers, tomatoes, and some rhubarb. She plans to keep the hobby next year. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. New data shows the Bloomington normal economy continues to bounce back from the pandemic in spots. After big drops in retail sales during the spring, the summer improved a lot. Patrick Hoban of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council says there was no traditional bump in sales for April as people spent tax returns. They then spent cautiously in May because of the pandemic. Hoban says retail sales improved in June, and July shocked him.
But right now, July somehow passed the last 2 years. So I want to take a deeper dive into this to see if there's any changes in the rates or if we really just loosened our wallets with the loosening of the restrictions. Like, was everybody just cooped up for so long that when it was time to finally get back out and about, we did and started spending like crazy? Or is there something else in this number? But either way, I mean, spending is back, so that's a good thing. So what I have noticed locally is the shifting in the dollars, you know, from some of the sit-down restaurants to some of the hardware stores. I don't know about everybody else, but you can just drive through the parking lots and see the rise there. But spending's up. I just did not expect it to exceed the last 2 years.
Not all is rosy. Unemployment rates have begun to fall, though Hoban says the McLean and DeWitt County area are not where they need to be. He says 8% unemployment might look good compared to the height of the Great Recession when the housing bubble popped, but alongside the average of the last few years, it's not so great. He finds an uneven picture as well in the number of workers with jobs in the area.
From March to April, it dropped about 12,000. So now we're really starting to compare from March to July, where are we at? And so we went from being down about 12,000 to now we're down 4,000. It is good news, but we're actually still down 9,000 compared to last year. But trending-wise, we're trending in the right direction when it comes to our employment.
Another metric the Economic Development Council pays attention to is business investment. Businesses expanding or new ones coming in and building. Hoban says data for the second quarter is mixed, but overall presents a hopeful picture.
Permit-wise, we're definitely down for the number of projects, but that's totally being made up. We had already projected that we were going to exceed this by some of the projects in the pipeline. We have surpassed last year. So total investment in McLean County is at right now $178 million. Last year at $124 million. I see this continuing through October and November. Even though we would normally decline then due to the colder months, there's still more projects on the way. So as that goes, I think we're going to have a really good year when it comes to commercial investments and creating new jobs to the community.
The number of leads, site visits, and the people who ask for proposals from the Economic Development Council for possible locations for new businesses is actually up a bit, close to one a week, Hoban says. And while Hoban's job encourages him to romance potential businesses and to be optimistic about Bloomington Normal prospects, he says development field thinking suggests permanent economic changes the pandemic may bring could help McLean County.
Data centers used to be these really large national centers. Now they're starting to be smaller, more regional based. But then even, I don't want to call them micro data centers, but you're going to see them smaller units getting closer to cell phone towers. Because as we all started working from home, as the kids went back to school, they crashed Zoom. There's so much more cloud computing needed, and that's why you're going to see more data centers on the rise.
He says the continued use of work-from-home technology will also make it more likely for people to choose Bloomington Normal to live and work and only occasionally commute to an office in Chicago. Hoban's comments come from the most recent BN by the Numbers quarterly seminar from the Economic Development Council. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
You're listening to WGLT Election 2020 coverage. Throughout the campaign season, we're conducting interviews and forums with the candidates in different races. Today, we're talking with Abby Sorrells, the Democratic candidate for McLean County Coroner. She's running against incumbent Republican Kathy Yoder, who did not respond to several interview requests. We'll begin with an opening statement. Abby, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and why you want to be coroner?
Sure. First, Dana, thank you for having me today, and thank you to WGLT for giving us this forum to be able to speak about our campaign, especially during COVID, when we aren't able to do as much right now. So my name is Abby Sorrells, and I am a candidate for McLean County Coroner, and I am a wife and a mother of three awesome kids that are 12, 15, and 17, and I'm a board-certified nurse practitioner. And my nursing background is primarily in emergency and flight nursing. So I have a lot of critical care experience and dealt with a lot of traumatic events with families in my previous roles. I have my master's in the science of nursing, and I served in the Illinois Army National Guard. The reason why we decided to settle in McLean County is because the schools are awesome. There's a lot of opportunities to do activities with our kids and for ourselves as husband and wife, so we love the area. And I decided to run for coroner because I've been approached multiple times because people knew I was interested in it. And I was looking to serve my community, and I just think I have a lot to offer the office that would be some improvements. And so I look forward to being able to do that for our community.
What do you think is working well in the current coroner's office, and what would you want to address or do differently?
So I think the coroner's office does have a lot of great aspects. Our coroner's office is very lucky in that it's one of the few in our area that do autopsies. So we have an amazing forensic pathologist, Dr. Denton, who I don't think we could do as much as we do without him. We do a lot of autopsies from the surrounding counties. So Peoria, Springfield, Champaign, and McLean County, they're the only ones that are doing autopsies for a lot of these surrounding smaller counties. So I think that we do well in providing that service to those counties.
So the coroner's office is a unique position in that it's elected, it's partisan, but unlike some other elected officials, you're not doing the kind of traditional representative casting votes on behalf of constituents. Talk a little bit about your political philosophy and how that would play into representing or reflecting voters.
So I don't think my political philosophy plays into this role in any way. I think that it's very frustrating to speak with people who don't even want to discuss what your plans would be for the office based on your political affiliation. And I have a conversation with people a lot about how this holds no political power. We need to be investigating who we're voting for in these, particularly the countywide roles, because our political affiliation does not play a role in how we will serve our community. So for me, and for the role of coroner, I think that people need to really be doing their homework, asking people in the community, have you dealt with the coroner's office? And if so, what are your experiences? Because what we need in our office is not a political affiliation. We need someone who is going to care about our community, who's going to be compassionate and professional and be able to carry out the duties of the coroner. And I don't think that political affiliation has anything to do with how they would do in that role.
What would your approach be to building and retaining qualified staff within the coroner's office?
The very first thing that I would like to do, and I've mentioned this before, I would like to work with the county board in working at reducing the salary of the coroner. And a lot of people get upset when I say that, and you know, you deserve this money. And I agree that it is a demanding job and it requires a lot of time. But one of the things that gets overlooked is a lot of the staff in that office have been on a salary freeze for several years, while the role of the coroner has continued to get these increases in salary. And so there has been a big turnover. In fact, in a 6-month window, there was all of the staff, 100% turnover in the full-time staff. And a lot of that had to do with the salary and the work environment. And so I think that if we can increase their pay, you know, I looked back at over the last 10 years of the budget, they're not making much more per year than what they were making 10 years ago. So I think it's important that we pay everybody a fair wage in that office, because that's going to get you more qualified staff that are going to be committed to that role.
This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. You're listening to an interview with Abby Sorrells, the Democratic candidate for McLean County Coroner. I'm Dina Vollmer. Abby, what community health issues do you feel passionately about, and how would you address those issues as coroner?
I feel passionate about a lot of community health issues. For me, my number one passion is for drug dependence issues. I personally have experienced that within my family, and so I've seen the struggles that, you know, the person who's suffering with that dependence issue has, as well as the family around them. So drug dependence is my number one priority. I also think that suicide prevention and overdose rates need to be looked at, as well as our mental health access. I think that our county does a really great job and has a lot of good resources, but there's only so much that we can do. I think that it would be important to work with other organizations like NAMI. We really need to have more mental health professionals within our community, and that's where we're lacking right now, is there's just not access to those things. So those are things that I would like to work with organizations, and I've talked to people who serve on the board for NAMI, and I would just love to see there be more psychiatrists and psychologists here that are accessible, not only for adults, but our pediatric population. Right now they're having to go to Peoria, and even that is hard for them to get into those services. So those are some of my pressing issues, as well as some issues like heart disease. I mean, there's a lot of modifiable factors. So, you know, a lot of outreach about exercise and healthy eating and smoking cessation. Those are all things that we can do to just improve the overall health of our community.
And COVID-19 is obviously front of mind for a lot of us. Is there a role that the coroner's office can play in community education and mitigation efforts?
I really do think that that is a role they could play. You know, when you are a nurse and you are, especially for a higher level nurse, when you have your master's degree or your doctorate's degree, you have that background to be able to provide good education, good evidence-based practice. And that's what we really need is, you know, there's so many rumors about, you know, do I wear a mask? Do I not wear a mask? And does it cause more health problems? But, you know, as a health professional, I have that knowledge and have that ability to pull out that evidence-based practice information and relay that to the community. And I think that we have needed a health leader in this situation. This has been a crazy time. And I think just having somebody to step up and say, this is what we need to be doing to move our community forward, to keep businesses open. We need that in our community. And I think that a coroner who has a medical background most definitely has the ability to do that.
So the coroner deals with a lot of different people. There's law enforcement, there's members of the public, people's family members, and then also the media. Do you want to talk a little bit about what your approach would be to managing those relationships?
So having been an emergency room nurse, I've worked with a lot of these people before. I've worked with members of the community and law enforcement and EMS. And so I already have a very good relationship with a lot of these agencies within the community from that interaction in the emergency department. I think just prioritizing who you need to be talking to, a big open communication with families, keeping them up to date. This is, you know, if you're dealing with a coroner, it is a terrible time for you. You're not dealing with a coroner for, you know, an average death. There's a lot of investigation and questions and consoling that needs to happen when you're in that role. And so the coroner needs to be able to prioritize and manage all of those different aspects while still providing compassionate care to the members of our community. And that's one thing that I really want to focus on when I get in office.
Let's move to closing statements. Abby, what else do voters need to know about you?
So I just hope that people take the time to get to know me as a candidate. I think that, you know, a political label is not the end all be all in this position. I want someone to do their homework and vote for somebody who is going to truly speak out for them and be their voice when they need one. I feel that right now my opponent has never been held accountable for her actions and she avoids certain organizations. We need to be able to speak to what we've done in our office and to come out and answer to the things that we have done. And if people have questions, you should be available for an answer for that. So I'm running because I want to serve all of the residents of our county. I want to be available to everybody at any time. If you have a question, if you want to request an inquest and you have a valid reason for that, I don't think we should be turning families down for those reasons. So at the end of the day, I just want you to vote for a coroner who you know is going to serve you and be there for you if you ever need them.
That's Abby Sorrells, the Democratic candidate running for McLean County Coroner. She's running against Republican incumbent Kathy Yoder, who did not respond to several requests for interview. Hear all our election coverage at WGLT.org or online at the WGLT YouTube channel. I'm Dina Vollmer.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Dog owners who wonder what's going on in the minds of their furry friends can find answers in the research of an Illinois Wesleyan University psychology professor. Ellen Furlong is a dog psychologist who has a new audiobook available on Audible called Decoding Dogs: Inside the Canine Mind. In this interview with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell, Furlong says a lot of what dogs think is, what's that smell like? She says they can sniff out one dirty sock in a pile of 2 million socks and even get a whiff of cancer cells. After having so many questions about her own dogs growing up, Furlong says she decided to embark on a journey to find the answers to those burning questions.
We know, for example, that there are these motivational differences that I was tracking in my dogs track with some breed differences. So we know that terriers, as a general group, tend to have different personality traits than spaniels. So terriers tend to be more stubborn, and spaniels tend to be a little more pliant and really want to work closely and collaboratively with humans. And this seems to be probably because of their breed history, so what they were bred for. Terriers were bred to work independently, to go down holes and kill rodents and things, whereas spaniels are bred to work collaboratively with a person out hunting.
And in your audiobook, you said comparing humans and dogs are like comparing apples to oranges. What do you mean by that?
So a lot of people ask me when they first hear what I do, you know, how smart are dogs? And they really want to know, like, dogs are as smart as like a four-year-old child or something. And that's really, a problematic way to think about it, because dogs have different kinds of problems that they need to solve than humans do. So comparing, you know, the kinds of world that a dog lives in to the kind of world that a human lives in are two very different things. Some problems that dogs need to encounter, you know, they live in this world of smells, right? And that's a very different world than the world that we live in. So if we were, say, to compare ourselves to dogs on a smelling task, we would look totally ridiculous and you know, incapable of doing anything because they are so much better than us. But if we were to compare dogs to us on, say, a language task, they would look utterly ridiculous, like they can't do anything.
I was looking at the Wesleyan's Dog Scientist site, and I came across this quote that I found pretty interesting. It said, by studying the minds of our canine companions, we can learn not only about how they think and reason, but a little more about how we as humans think and reason as well.
Yeah.
How so?
Dogs are a really interesting species because of their long evolutionary history with humans. So we can see essentially the things that matter the most to humans in many ways are reflected back to us in dogs because we have selectively bred them for these purposes over thousands of years. So, for example, we know that social cues are really important for humans navigating social relationships, and dogs have been bred now over many thousands of years to pick up on such social cues that humans give off. So a lot of times looking at what the dogs are doing and how the dogs are thinking and what kinds of problems we've bred dogs to solve can tell us more about our own selves.
I came across a story months ago that talked about how dogs are being used to sniff out COVID-19. You know, just kind of, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Like, why dogs?
Dogs have incredible noses. And I know that a lot of people know that dogs are good at smelling things, but I don't think people really understand just how good they are. So their noses are something like 10 to 100,000 times more sensitive than ours are. Just to put this in perspective, they can sniff out one pair of dirty socks in a pile of 2 million dirty socks. So they have pretty amazing senses of smell. One of the first times that people discovered that dogs are good at diagnosing people with an illness was when a dog kept sniffing his owner's leg in this one spot where she had a mole. And she finally went into the doctor, and the doctor said she had melanoma. And so her dog had been telling her for like months that she had a melanoma on her leg. And so researchers at that point really became interested in this. And now they've discovered that dogs can even smell melanoma on a Band-Aid that somebody was wearing. So they're so good at detecting all kinds of scents that we just can't even envision. I'm not for sure about that with COVID, but I do know with diagnosing cancer, for example, they can be pretty sensitive and more accurate than a lot of the other tests on the market.
What's your favorite tip or life hack when it comes to training dogs?
Training should always be fun. And it should be fun for the owner. It should be fun for the dog. If the owner is getting frustrated, chances are the dog is getting frustrated, and you should just take a break. The other thing that I think people miss out on is goes back to something I was talking about earlier with their sense of smell, that a sense of smell is so hugely important for dogs. You also want to be sure that you can give your dog a chance to do that sniffing. This is really important for their mental health, for them to be happy, is to really be able to sort of sniff things and get the essentially their version of the morning news, right? What happened out here overnight?
Ellen Furlong is a dog psychologist at Illinois Wesleyan University. She spoke with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell about her new audiobook about dog cognition, Decoding Dogs Inside the Canine Mind. Find the full interview at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We'd like to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter. We're all at WGLT News. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.